From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Dan Raviv, the national correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News, and Stephen Collinson, a senior reporter at CNN Politics. Our moderator is CBS Radio contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome, everyone, and here are the issues. U.S. President Donald Trump delivered his first State of the Union address to a House both physically and politically divided. And the combination of boasts on the administration's accomplishments and calls to strengthen borders and confront foreign powers was received very differently by different audiences in the states and around the world. House Intelligence Committee memos over the FBI handling of the investigation into Russian influence in the last presidential election may be released by the White House despite the objections of its own Justice Department. The Republicans are saying that they are fulfilling their responsibilities of oversight, but the Democrats say it's more a case of overreach. And a continuing resolution keeping the U.S. government open for just a few more weeks is about to expire, which means a government shutdown is once again a possibility. So, gentlemen, so much to talk about, so little time. And they say January was a very long year, I've heard people say already. Let's start with the State of the Union, about a 90-minute speech, I believe the third longest in history thereabouts. As I mentioned, the speech was sort of a laundry list of accomplishments regarding the economy and so forth, especially the economy, heavily weighted on that, and then followed with a mix of stories about and guests that highlighted his positions on immigration in North Korea. And there was a glaring omission of any mention, I believe, on the investigation into Russian meddling into U.S. politics. So the old saying goes, you know, where you stand depends on where you sit. And I think that was very apparent when you looked at the House there. Dan, just technically, was it a well-executed State of the Union? And what was the president trying to achieve with this speech? And did he accomplish it?
I think he was trying to look professional. I guess he would say presidential. He used to say that being presidential is so easy, so he doesn't do it all the time. He tweets often at rallies. He's very informal. He says things off the cuff that aren't carefully considered. But when he gives a speech like this, well, he stuck to the teleprompter, he stuck to the script, he hardly added any words at all, and he spoke very slowly. I guess you could say it was the State of the Union in special English. Not to make fun, but anyone around the entire world, therefore, could understand, and he just wanted to take his time, like a man not in a rush. But note that he did offer two big ideas to the other political party, to the Democrats. One, immigration, some changes to immigration restrictions, but offering them that some people who are in this country without papers could be legalized, up to 1.8 million people. He thought that would appeal to the Democrats. And infrastructure, spending a lot of money, more than $1 trillion, not all of it government money, but an idea that he, again, he thought should appeal to Democrats. So it was reaching out to the other side.
Steve, what was your take on the speech? Was it effective? And do you think it was effective with more than just the base of the Trump campaign?
I think it was an effective State of the Union address. It struck the normal notes, you know, calling for unity, invoking patriotism. But it was also an address that I think was in a vacuum, in a way. If Donald Trump had given that address, you know, without the evidence of the last year, it would have been received differently. You know, this was a president who said that Americans need to unite, we need to come together. Yet he has governed by tearing at some of the societal, racial, and social divides in this country. And your point about the Russia inquiry was very interesting, because there were two possible approaches. He could have taken the Nixon approach or the Clinton approach. In 1974, President Nixon mentioned the Watergate scandal and said 1 year of Watergate is enough. Seven months later, he was out of office. In the 1999 State of the Union address, President Clinton, who had already been impeached by the House and was amid his Senate trial, didn't mention the Monica Lewinsky scandal. I think the president was well advised not to mention the Russia investigation, because it's so polarizing and it would have overshadowed everything else had he said it. But I think it was a very well-delivered State of the Union address, but you have to look at it in the context of the times.
Dan, let's get into the politics and policies that were expressed in the speech. I thought that the thing that was sort of the hump in the camel was immigration, talking about MS-13 over and over and over again. First, if you could give a brief description of what MS-13 is and then sort of characterize the administration's position on immigration and if it really reached out to people or if it sort of built a proverbial wall for negotiations.
MS-13 is a violent crime gang. The gang is thought of as Latino and connected with the drug trade. And so, indeed, you know, law enforcement all over the country have been trying to stamp out that kind of gang warfare. But when President Trump speaks about them, and he did it as a candidate, too, he's probably trying to underline that immigrants can be dangerous. Once in a while, he says, they're good ones. We want people to come merit-based if they love America and they have a lot of science and other skills. But the rest of that sentence would be, we don't want you otherwise.
Steve, do you think that what the administration wants is more of a physical security, which is what is said when the president is being presidential in his speeches in controlled environments like this, or if it's more of a cultural issue? I've heard some suggest as when you sort of get that, when you get the tweets and in other more spontaneous forms.
I think it's both in many ways. I think the president sees this as a cultural issue. If we think back to 2015, when he gave his first speech as a candidate, the day he launched his campaign, the first thing he talked about and the most resonant thing was immigration. He talked about how Mexico was not sending its best people to the United States. It's undeniable that that message resonated with Donald Trump's base. Other people in the administration, John Kelly, for example, the chief of staff who used to be the Homeland Security Secretary, he has a hardline view that some people would see on immigration, but I don't think it's necessarily based on antipathy to immigrants. It's much more of a security perspective. The problem has been is that it's difficult to know exactly where the administration stands on immigration, you know, for much of the time. We're talking a lot about what we call DACA recipients, and now they're at risk of losing their legal status, and Congress has to come up with a fix. The president has been all over the map on that issue. On the one hand, he says he loves these people and he wants to help them. On the other hand, he's using them as a bargaining chip in negotiations with Democrats. So immigration is an issue that's at the core of the divisions in American politics, and it has been for the last 15 years. And it's an issue that cuts across the dividing lines, and that's why it's so difficult to fix, because it's an existential issue for conservatives who are preoccupied about security and illegal immigration. It's a key issue for Democrats who have many Hispanics in their voting base in some of the most crucial swing states. So it's a really, really tough issue, and it's difficult to see how it gets fixed.
Dan, I'm going to let you sort of have the last word on this speech. As I said, immigration was the most outstanding part for me, the most outstanding issue. Was it the same for you, or were what other issues were just under the surface there, ranking 2, 3, 4, if you will?
Well, because I said reaching out to Democrats was a theme, whether it's sincere or not, look for that infrastructure idea also. It's coming soon. And President Trump thinks that ought to be really popular, and Democrats and labor unions ought to like the idea. I think what we're seeing is that Democrats don't want to do him any favors. Also, with the fact that it won't all be government money, in the view of the Democratic Party, Trump is trying to help his buddies in big business make a lot of money. And this just shows you the skepticism about everything. But I will also underline, Democrats don't want to do Trump any favors. They think that the Republicans are back on their heels and this coming November will do badly in the midterm elections. And so I don't see Democrats in a cooperative spirit right now.
Well, the interesting takeaway for me for this is, again, as a sort of veteran viewer of these issues, usually there's someone who goes on the road and does this whole State of the Union thing and sells it to the public. And it's interesting that no one is actually doing that.
So the president didn't go out.
That's no, there's no tour that's being done. So it'll be interesting to see, I guess, it'll be left to other devices to get that message out to the public, if at all.
By the way, the thinking in the White House apparently was the speech was so well delivered, it stands for itself. Others here in Washington have said, well, immediately, the so-called scandal and possible Russia collusion memos, I know we're going to talk about, et cetera, all of that sort of took over right away.
Indeed, we will be talking about the Russian memo, and that's going to happen right about now. So as we sit here, the House Intelligence Committee and its chairman, Devin Nunes, have produced a memo regarding the methods used by the FBI and Justice Department regarding the FBI investigation of Russian meddling. We will discuss this issue, but first we're going to take a quick break, and after that we'll come back with more issues in the news.
This program is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. A reminder that Issues in the News is available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com and don't forget to like us on Facebook. Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Dan Ravid, national correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News, and Stephen Collinson, a senior reporter at CNN Politics. Our moderator is Michael Williams, Washington-based CBS radio contributor.
I'm going to start with you, Steve. This is so inside Washington, some of this. We tend to use a lot of technical terms, and we use them very freely, very much like a sport in which we know all the terminology and that sort of thing. So for our very large global audience, as we talk about this, I was going to say, let's talk about it as if we're talking a European audience or announcer talking about American football. Let's explain everything as we go along. So we've talked about this memo. Can we describe what this memo is supposed to be and exactly who theoretically is releasing this and why?
Right. So this is a memo that was written by the staff of the House Intelligence Committee. What we don't know exactly what's in it because we haven't read it, but we understand
at this recording,
right,
we don't know.
Yes. What we understand, what it says, is that there were abuses by the FBI in the procedures they used to get a search warrant, to get a surveillance warrant on Carter Page, who was a Trump campaign foreign policy advisor. And this is a memo that was written by the Republican staff using classified intelligence. Democrats say that basically this memo cherry picks the intelligence. It doesn't tell the full story. And what we've seen is a pretty stunning showdown between the White House and the FBI. The FBI issued a very unusual statement coming out and saying that they had grave concerns that the memo didn't tell the full story about this procedures used to get this search warrant. And it's all about this dossier. You might have heard about this dossier, the famous dossier that was written by a former British intelligence agent, Christopher Steele, which was about alleged links between Trump and Russia. And that was used as part of the evidence that the FBI put forward to the Special Intelligence Court to get this warrant. Now, basically what this comes down to, it plays into this whole issue of Republicans on Capitol Hill and the White House as well, under the leadership of the president himself, trying to discredit the Robert Mueller probe into alleged collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign, and the suggestion that the president obstructed justice by firing the former FBI chief James Comey. So what we really need to know about this, the details aren't that important. It's a symptom of this incessant simmering suspicion that the president has towards the U.S. intelligence agencies because he believes that the people there are biased against him and they're trying to invalidate his 2016 election win.
Dan, as Steve suggests, House Intelligence Committee ranking member Democrat Adam Schiff has stated that the memo being sent to the White House has been significantly altered since it was reviewed by the committee as a whole. He's suggesting that it's a different memo.
That's a bureaucratic detail, and here's why. The House Intelligence Committee, like everything in Congress right now, is dominated by the Republican Party. So only the Republicans on that committee approved this memo about FBI behavior for sending to the White House to try to get approval to release it. So only the Republicans were involved in that anyway. So what if a couple of words were changed here and there? The Democrats all voted, no, we don't want to release it. In fact, the Democrats, the minority, they wrote their own counter memo with their own explanation of how the investigation began. But the Republican majority voted not to release the Democratic Party version. So I think that's, you know, getting just too technical, a little criticism from the Democrats. You even changed the memo. I will say this as the big picture. In the run-up to releasing it, Republicans in Congress said it is alarming what's in it because it shows that the Obama administration was, this is their word, weaponizing intelligence agencies and surveillance in order to hit the Trump campaign. So this is Republicans taking a stand right now that they want to support Trump in office. They're against the investigation. They're getting ready, possibly, for the main prosecutor, the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, to release a report or indict more people. And the Republicans are already setting up a story that the whole thing is illegitimate. It's a really big deal, but it also shows that the Republican Party is standing with Donald Trump. He had seemed quite an outsider, but I think they've united around him. Frankly, they like his policies. They think they're getting a lot done for their agenda, like the recent tax reform. And so whether Republicans like his style or not, they're standing with him.
Right, because in today's Washington, not being the majority means that you do not govern at all. So it's about keeping the majority. It's about having your policies go through despite.
But there had been a thought, Stephen Wright, you're covering politics every day here. Half a year ago, there was the possibility that Republicans, in order to keep the majority, would abandon Trump.
Right. And I think you make a good point. What we've seen is the Republican Party, at least in the House, gathering around Trump. And the most interesting aspect of that is Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, who was, I would say, agnostic towards Trump during the campaign. Now, this raises very interesting questions. If the special counsel, Robert Mueller, comes back and says, yes, and we don't know he will, but if he did, if he came back and said the president obstructed justice and the Congress needs to look at this and consider whether we need to proceed to impeachment proceedings. The question now is, would Republicans who control the House consider that? And I think what we've seen is this whole effort to discredit Mueller, the FBI, is aimed at shaping the political terrain for Republicans who are facing re-election in the midterm elections in districts that Trump won, to get them to say, you know what, we don't want to look at impeachment proceedings. And impeachment proceedings would start in the House. The effect of that is, you know, the midterm elections in November for a third of the Senate, for the whole of the House of Representatives, I think are going to hinge on a question of whether the President of the United States should be impeached. And Democrats believe that they've got a good chance to keep the to win back the House. Republicans are trying to cling on to the House. It's a huge question, and it's a massive issue in politics right now.
Well, I think you're right that politics will determine, the elections will determine whether impeachment happens,
right?
Because the Republican House is never going to do it. I think
right.
We can be confirmed on that. So we know that the memo, yes, maybe it was altered, maybe it wasn't, maybe it's a detail, maybe it wasn't. What we do know is that the Department of Justice, which belongs to the administration, is a part of the administration, and the FBI, which is a part of the administration, are completely against the release of this memo, thinking it would damage national security. It would reveal not only sources, but also methods that are crucial to the surveillance for the safety of the United States of America. If it turns out that the White House was involved with creating a memo that it then actually chose to approve and release, that this is really sort of a ploy to discredit the Mueller investigation. Is there a political price to pay for the White House, for Devin Nunes, for Paul Ryan, and the Republican Party?
Only if that's widely recognized. And not everyone feels the same way, right? Where you stand is based on where you sit. So anyway, if you're a Democrat, and in general you're skeptical of President Trump, then you're going to think that this whole memo idea was a political ploy. But if you are a conservative and generally want to look for reasons to reject the so-called Russia scandal, then you might seize upon this memo and say, you see? And as Stephen was pointing out, if the Republicans hold on to Congress, they're never going to impeach President Trump. And they're going to point to this memo, among other things, as saying, we can ignore this scandal. It's illegitimate.
It's time to move on.
They can say
that. Sort of thing. Okay. I'll give you the last word on this one, Stephen. Is the administration trying to get a political solution to a legal problem? Because there's politics involved in this, of course, but the legal problem is the Mueller investigation. That's a legal situation. Is this trying to seek a political solution to a legal problem? And can you really win a war against the FBI?
That's a good point. I mean, yes, it is trying to find a political solution to a legal problem, but ultimately, this issue is going to be decided by politics, because It's very unlikely, even if Mueller decides that the president has obstructed justice, that he's going to try to prosecute the president. There are all sorts of legal arguments about whether you can indict a sitting president. It's a political issue. An impeachment would be a political question.
Yes.
And it comes down to whether the House of Representatives believes that the president has committed high crimes and misdemeanors and would start impeachment proceedings, would impeach the president on various articles of impeachment, and then move it on to the Senate for a trial. So it is inherently, under the Constitution, a political question. And in many ways, the White House is following a playbook that we saw 20 years ago in the Clinton administration, where the president was impeached, but he was popular, and the economy was doing very well, and a majority of Americans didn't want to see President Clinton leave office, and he was impeached by the House, but the Senate didn't vote to convict him on the articles of impeachment. And the White House is very smart, because this is a political question, and they're legislating it, if you like, in a political manner.
I think you're right. And as I always like to point out, when Richard Nixon got on the helicopter with two peace signs, he had 32% approval rating. Your base is your base, is what we're saying.
The base is still there, but it's not enough sometimes. All right, Nixon had to leave. Trump, it's probably wishful thinking by liberal Democrats that they can, quote, get rid of him. But when it comes to weakening a president, making it impossible to get legislation passed, well, that is in the realm of possibility.
I think you nailed it there. We got just a couple of minutes, and I want to go over this shutdown. Just a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. government was shut down because no deal was reached to fund it. And the continuing resolution that kept the government going again, got it going again, is about to run out.
Yeah. 3 weeks worth of money. That's all they did.
3 weeks. That was kicking the can down a road, but a fairly weak kick, I would say that was, or a very short road.
Well, I bet you that's going to happen again, because otherwise, somehow, the House and the Senate have to come up with a full year budget. What year are we talking about? The fiscal year that started last October 1st. The U.S. government has no budget.
Well, we haven't had a budget for 10 years.
Yeah, well, I don't think in 1 week they're going to come up with one. Right. Again, it's just continuing resolutions to stay open, and each time there is some sort of perilous cliff that we might jump off, in this case with immigration policy. We'll see if the deadlines work this time.
I have heard that, left to his own devices, that the DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, this situation with Dreamers would have been solved if the president was left to his own devices. But he does have some very hardline individuals that are speaking to him that feel otherwise. One of his aides, Stephen Miller, Louis Gohmert, and others on the Hill. Do you think that there is an opportunity, Steve, for a clean DACA bill that can get that issue off the table, and then working towards comprehensive immigration, funding the military? These are the other issues that are larger issues here. Can we separate one thing from another and then move forward on them?
No, I don't think so, principally because granting residency and ultimately citizenship to what Republican voters see as illegal immigrants is a really tough vote if you're a member of the House and you are from a district that Donald Trump won. These voters see that kind of solution as simply amnesty, and it's a really hard vote to make, and I don't believe that conservative Republicans can make that vote unless they get the other side of the bargain, like a lot of funding for the wall, changes to the legal immigration system. It's a really difficult issue. Now, we talked about the government shutdown. It didn't work out so well for the Democrats because the Democratic Party is split between Democrats who want to try and win the 2018 midterm elections and want to enliven their base on the issue of immigration, and other people in the party who are running for re-election in states that Donald Trump won. So the Democratic Party has to appease those two sort of halves of its base. But you also have a lot of Democrats in the Senate that are already thinking about the 2020 presidential election. And they want to use the issue of immigration to build up their kudos with the base. So you have a Democratic Party that's split. I don't think that the Democrats are going to try the government shutdown tactic again, because it didn't work for them and it exemplified the splits in their party.
And unfortunately, that brings us to our own shutdown. That's all the time that we have. Thanks to Dan Raviv, national correspondent for Israeli-based channel I-24 News, and Stephen Collinson, senior reporter at CNN Politics. This program is produced by VOA's Current Affairs, Rebecca Ward. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites, and I'm Michael Williams. Thanks for listening.